Mary Wilson of The Supremes. And honey, I am up close with Savoir Fair on 91.5 WMFO in Medford.
February is Black History Month, and we have a presentation from Kevin.
Welcome, welcome everyone. You are now listening to Songs from the Squid Pod. I'm your host, Savoir Fair, and yes, I have a special edition of the Squid Pod for you tonight as we celebrate Black History Month. Tonight, we'll be hearing from African-American artists from the 1980s with one exception. We'll also pay tribute to two African-American female artists who were larger-than-life queens of pop music, one of which happens to be the subject of tonight's Squid Pod 80s Trivia Question of the Week. 35 years ago this week, Whitney Houston reached number one on the U.S. Hot 100 for the second time. The accompanying music video won Best Female Video at the 1986 MTV Music Video Awards, where she was also nominated for Best New Artist. Name the single. And the answer to tonight's Squid Pod 80s trivia question is, How Will I Know?, the fifth single from her eponymous 1985 debut. That was the first album by a woman to yield three number one hits. She broke her own record on her follow-up album, Whitney, which produced four number one hits. Some other amazing firsts and milestones. Whitney is the only artist to have seven consecutive number one singles on the U.S. Hot 100. The previous record of six consecutive number one hits had been shared by the Beatles and the Bee Gees. I could go on. The number of her accomplishments is still staggering after all these years. In addition to this being the anniversary of one of her most iconic songs reaching number one, it was 9 years ago yesterday, February 11th, that we lost her at the age of 48. Female artists like Whitney were more than groundbreakers, they were earth-shattering. And my next tribute goes out to someone who put a crack in that glass ceiling for future artists like Whitney decades ago. As I'm sure you've heard by now, Mary Wilson of the Supremes passed away this past Monday at the age of 76. It was surprising given that just 2 days prior, she had announced that she was planning on releasing new material before her next birthday, which was only a few weeks away. Back in 2017, I had the honor and privilege of interviewing her during her two-night stint here in Boston over at Sculler's Jazz Club. You may notice that at the start of all my shows, I play her personal introduction to my show. She was also generous enough to record a general station ID that I set to the Supremes hit Come See About Me, which perhaps you've heard occasionally throughout the week. And a quick thanks to Edward Buchert of Tears of the Gods, Plastic Sushi, Strawberries and Thyme for helping me put that together. So to start the show, I'm going to play a few songs from the Supremes as well as my interview with her. Prior to the Supremes, they were briefly known as the Primettes. Their very first single, Tears of Sorrow, was released in 1960, and everyone knows the Supremes was led by Diana Ross, but the B-side of that single features Mary on lead vocals. Remembering Mary Wilson of the Supremes, tonight on Songs from the Squid Pod.
Oh,
You are listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford. I am Savoir Faire, your host for today, and joining me is a true pioneer of American music, Mary Wilson of the Supremes. Welcome to WMFO, Mary.
Thank you so very much.
It's our honor and a pleasure, I can assure you.
Thank you.
So let's get some facts out to our listeners for starters. You are in Boston this weekend, March 3rd through the 4th, for a two-day, four-show appearance at Sculler's Jazz Club in Boston. Are there any other cities in the U.S. that you are planning on visiting next?
Well, I'm on sort of a short tour now. I've been to, where am I going? I've been to New York. I was there, New York, at B.B. King's. And I went to Sculler's Sculler's. I'm in Boston now. That's where I am. I was in Las Vegas at the Smith Performing Arts Center there, and that was great. I was in Blues Alley in Washington, D.C., and I'm just doing a little jazz tour here at the beginning of the year. And I'm having a ball, you know, because there are not a lot of great jazz clubs around that are still left. And I told my agent that's what I wanted to do. So I'll be, you know, touring America, going to Arizona and just all kind of places, doing this my up-close jazz show. And I'm just having a ball.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. And yes, you are right. Obviously, I can't speak for other cities here, but here in Boston, which I consider, you know, a nice hotbed of local and upcoming music, but we are really bereft here of great jazz clubs here. But Sculler's, of course, is one of them that has been around for a while. So we are just beside ourselves here that you have decided to perform here. So I attended your show last night, and again, thank you for inviting me.
Yes.
I thought we'd touch upon some of the comments you made during the show. For instance, you spoke about how a few years ago you decided on focusing on your ballads as opposed to covers of the Supreme hits during your live performances. In fact, I loved your line, you know, tonight it's all about me.
Yeah. Well, you know, because for all my life I've always said we. You know, we did this, we did that, we, you know, and I said, now it's about the I. And it's been 50-some years of celebrating my success with the Supremes, and I'm very, very happy about it. But sometimes in life, you do have, it's like when you're on an airplane and they say, before you help the person next to you, put your own mask on. I'm at that stage where I'm putting my own mask on right now, or taking my own mask off, let's put it that way.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's fun to have a career that, you know, where you share it with three people like I did, you know, the three of us. And I'm very happy. I often say that if I die and have to come back, I want to come back as Mary Wilson of the Supremes. But this is a good time in my life where I really am just searching for my own talent. It's kind of strange to say you're still searching for your talent after 50 years, but it's not like when you're young, you think everything happens overnight. After you've lived a full life, you realize you're still learning. You know, mm-hmm. Life is about learning, and it's good to have a chance to explore who you are, and that's where I am in my career right now, exploring my own gift from God.
You performed I Am Changing from Broadway's Dreamgirls in honor of your friend and fellow Supreme, Florence Ballard.
Yes.
Would you mind elaborating on how the relationship between the two of you led to the creation of the Supremes?
Yeah. Well, you know, people think that I kind of love Flo more than I love anybody else or Diane. And that's not true. I love all three of us. However, since Florence passed away in 1976, 40-some years ago, you know, she doesn't have a voice anymore. So I kind of talk up for her more than I talk up for me or Diane. But it was Florence who started me in the group. When we were in elementary school back in Detroit, Michigan, it was in 1959, and we were we did attend the same school, elementary school, and they had a talent show. I joined the talent show, and Florence was also on there. I didn't really know her, but after the show, we kind of migrated with each other, and she complimented me on how I had gotten the crowd really all crazy, you know, and everything, and I complimented her on her beautiful voice, because she had this really big, big, robust kind of voice. And I remember us walking home after school, and we made a vow. And we were like only 13 or 14 years old. We made this vow that, you know, they were putting the groups together, and if anyone wanted to put a group together, let's remember each other. And so she and I became best friends. A couple of days later, she came and told me on the school grounds there that her sister was dating this guy in this group, and the group wanted to put a group together. And so her sister told them about her. Florence told them about me, and then someone else had gone across the street from where we lived and asked Diane if she wanted to join, because they somehow or another knew her, and that's how the three of us got together. And did I tell you that the two members of that boys group were two members of who later became Temptations? That's Eddie Kendricks and Paul Williams.
So that time, you know, as you said, like everybody was kind of trying to put together groups. Was it really like a whirlwind, you know, back then in Detroit that you...
Yes, Detroit was one of those places, and New York was the same, too. You had like a group of people who all had this talent, and somehow or another ended up into various groups, and they were starting... Everyone had a little group, you know. You can stand on the street corners and sing, somewhere in the hallways and singing, and it was like this whole little thing happening, and it spun off from the doo-wop, you know, because everyone was, you know, in that doo-wop phase.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of whirlwind type of feeling, and you either had sports and people just were getting into it, and went on from there.
Yeah.
So during last night's show, prior to covering Norah Jones's Grammy-winning Don't Know Why, you spoke briefly about the fact that despite the Supremes having 12 number one hits from 1964 to 1969, the Supremes never received a Grammy Award during that time.
No, no, it did not.
Now, given that Black History Month...
And you know, the before you finish, the amazing part about that is we were one of the few groups who had that many hit records even today. I mean, people are just catching up with that record today. Well, number one records.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really, at one point during that time, you were more popular than the Beatles. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, we were, you know, it was one of the, kind of, but, you know, the Beatles were from England. There was that British invasion, and we were Americans, you know. So, mm-hmm. I mean, as Americans, I think we had that. But, yeah, it was one of those things. In fact, my friend last night said, Mary, you know, he has a list of how many times the Beatles were number one and we were number one. Or they were number two, and we, you know, that whole thing of each song. So I told him, I said, write all of them down so I could see which, you know. He said, yeah, there were lots of times when that would happen, you know, and you guys were just one-upping each other all the time. But what I'm finding out, what I'm seeing, is that still the Supremes have dropped down, not in popularity, because I think with the people we're still there, but in the polls of things. We're not still up on the polls like a lot of people are, and most of those mm-hmm. people are male groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a gender thing.
Well, that's a good point. And
you know, this is Women's Week here, a month.
Right, right.
So I'm speaking up for us girls.
There you go.
You know.
Well, given that, and the fact that Black History Month for 2017 ended less than a week ago, last night you covered songs of other historically prominent and progressive female artists like Lena Horne and Joni Mitchell. How have you been influenced by artists like that? And, you know, do you continue to see that inspiration in contemporary female artists?
Well, I have to say that I am a kind of an activist,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a quiet one, and I love causes, but I choose the ones that I'm really passionate about. And I do think that a lot of times women are not overlooked, but underplayed, and so I'm the kind of person I like to bring out those points about women, you know, and that. There are a lot of great female writers, but there are so many male writers. So I tend to want to bring out the female writers. Joni Mitchell is one of the greatest writers we have here in America of songs. Lena Horne was a great star. Unfortunately, it was before, you know, blacks were accepted in America as being the ultimate star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I like to bring out their best works. And do them. So that's why, yes, I've done a lot of the things for women causes.
What other female artists like inspired you as you were growing up in Detroit?
Well, there were many. You know, there was like Ethel Waters, I think, was one of the greatest artists of our times when we were growing up back mm-hmm. then, as a black artist. I mean, she did movies, she's on TV and all those kind of things, and was a singer. And probably if that were today, she'd be a bigger star than she was then. But, I mean, there are many, many, many. It's hard for me off the bat now to think. Of course, we had the Andrews sisters, who definitely inspired us because they were three. Another person is Nancy Wilson. She just had her 80th birthday. And she, of course, inspired me tremendously with her songs.
You covered Donna Summer's Last Dance last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I apologize if I'm giving away the show here to people who still
okay.
haven't bought tickets for tonight's show.
You know, it's kind of good to say it because I think a lot of people really do come there expecting me expecting to hear more Supreme songs. So I'm glad that you're bringing this up. That way people will be a little more prepared.
Exactly. In fact, I was pleasantly surprised. Because I think I kind of went into the show last night thinking that which of course I would have been fine with because obviously it's your songs are fantastic. But it was a nice, again, a nice surprise, just to put it that way, you know, that you know, focusing more on what songs and artists like mean more to you, you know, over the years here, and that that is kind of like shaping what this this tour. But the one thing I wanted to, one comment I wanted to make on Donna Summer's pick there last night, you know, that was that intentional? Because, I mean, she is a native of Dorchester here in Boston. Did you consciously?
No, it was not intentional, actually.
Okay.
It was still one of the things that we were just talking about, singing songs that of women, mm-hmm. who, you know, inspired me in terms of what I do.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing. That went over big here. again, because she's, I mean, you know, she was born here. I know, like, obviously she moved to New York, and that's where her career really took off from. But we still consider her a Boston gal.
Okay, I'm glad you told me
Is there a particular performance, whether here in the U.S., overseas, anything that stands out for any reason?
We had a tremendous career in lots of huge events. And so, you know, it's almost like trying to say which child you love best. It's hard because, you know, we did command performances for the royal family in England. That was surely one of the greatest times because here you are, three little black girls from America during segregation time performing, you know, in England for the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have great pictures of us with the Queen Mother.
Wow.
After their World Command performance. And that's one of my favorite pictures. You know, then we did, of course, the Dick Clark tours. And that was a major event for us because it was just after our first number one record. Well, it was before our first number one record came, was a hit. And that was still, again, it was 1964. And we were on the Dick Clark tour, Caravan of Stars tours. That was major for us because we were called the No-Hit Supremes at Motown because everyone else had hit records. Stevie Wonder had gotten a hit record, the Marvelettes, the Vandellas, everyone except us. And so finally we get this record out, Where Did Our Love Go? And it was released while we were on the Dick Clark tour, and it became number one. So that was really the first big major thing that you know, we did, and it was just a surprising moment and a wonderful moment because it made me understand that dreams can come true, and they do come true because our dreams came true with that hit record. We have been praying for a hit record for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, and I could go on and on and on about those type of things, you know, then appearing on the Ed Sullivan Show for, I think it was 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely, you know, a great time because before we had our hit records, everyone watched it at Sullivan Show Sunday nights. The families got to around one TV in a home,
mm-hmm.
and without a remote control. And we all, in a small TV, the entire family would watch Ed Sullivan. So when we did finally go on there, and then every Sunday or every other Sunday, he'd invite us back. So those were just a few of the great moments of our career. Now, for me, after the Supremes going on, again, I think I mentioned it on stage, I was appointed a cultural ambassador by Colin Powell. And I traveled just all over the world again, and I spoke on the epidemic of AIDS in mm-hmm. all of the African countries, and it was just major. So, you know, there are just many. And then, of course, I had an opportunity to write my book, my two books, actually. One became a bestseller. So that was another dream that came true for me. And I'm presently working on my third book, which is a coffee table book based on the Supremes gowns.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Our iconic gowns.
Right.
And they tour in museums. So they've been in Europe at the Victoria and Albert Museum and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum, the Grammy Museum out in L.A. So they kind of tour as well as me.
Yeah, well, I noticed on your website that you have a section, you know, devoted to that. And there's some great pictures there. So for any of our listeners out there that haven't seen that yet, I highly recommend going to marywilson.com, I believe it is.
Yes.
Yeah, there's some great footage there.
Thank you.
I cannot thank you enough for your time and, you know, and your energy. Everything about last night was just phenomenal. And I mean, you packed the house, of course. I am sure you're going to do the same here this evening. And of course, if anyone listening has not purchased their tickets and you've got nothing better to do, and trust me, you don't get tickets for this evening.
Well, thank you. And I thank you so much for bringing up the point about my up close show. And that's why I titled it Up Close, because people get a chance to see me right up close and see who I am as a singer, not so much as a Supreme, but just as an individual singer. And mm-hmm. and I love both. I mean, I loved being a Supreme, but I also love being able to perform and do the type of things that I personally enjoy as well.
And you brought that out last night. So,
well, thank you.
Again, thank you so much.
and I'm having my birthday on Monday, 73 years old. I'm so thrilled about that. I cannot wait.
Happy birthday. And I'll tell you one thing. You look and sound fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Girl likes to hear that.
I think everybody kind of, you know, was a little shocked to hear that last night. Hey, Mary, thank you so much for everything, for your efforts, your time, and for the tickets as well.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary. Take care of yourself.
Okay. All right. Will
Peace.
Do. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome back to Songs from the Squid Pod with yours truly, Savoir Faire. If you're just joining us, we're in the midst of the 2021 Squid Pod celebration of black musicians from the 1980s. Although the first set was definitely not focused on the 80s. Instead, we paid tribute to Mary Wilson of The Supremes, who passed away on Monday at the age of 76. We first heard the B-side to the Primettes' 1960 single Tears of Sorrow, Pretty Baby, which featured Mary on lead vocals. Although both Florence Ballard and Diana Ross are credited with providing backup vocals, the higher-pitched vocal in the chorus is Florence. And for the record, Florence passed away 45 years ago this month. Part one of my interview with Mary followed. That was recorded during her two-night, four-show performance at Sculler's Jazz Club here in Boston in 2017. Next up was the Supremes' Come See About Me, one of their 12 number one hits. That's off their 1964 release, Where Did Our Love Go? We then heard part two of my interview with Mary, followed by Back in My Arms again from the Supremes' 1965 album, More Hits by the Supremes. Wrapping up the set was my third and final portion of my interview with Mary. I've also included the link to the interview in tonight's playlist, which you can find on the station's website at WMFO.org and following the schedule link at the top of the page. I'll be forever grateful to Mary for granting me that interview. She gave me tickets to the show. I got to meet her afterwards as well. She was amazingly kind for someone of her stature. Certainly a moment I'll never forget. Rest in peace, Mary. Still more to get to tonight, so let's start the next set with the subject of tonight's Squid Pod 80s Trivia Question of the Week. Only on Songs from the Squid Pod. We'll be right back.
appreciate the finer things in life. The finest. I have learned. If I had a choice, I'd always choose love.
For there is one final quality that I believe makes the United States and the United Kingdom indispensable to this moment in history. And that is how we define ourselves as nations. Unlike most countries in the world, we do not define citizenship based on race or ethnicity. Being American or British is not about belonging to a certain group. It's about believing in a certain set of ideals, the rights of individuals, the rule of law. That is why we hold incredible diversity within our borders. That's why there are people around the world right now who believe that if they come to America, if they come to New York, if they come to London, if they work hard, they can pledge allegiance to our flag and call themselves Americans. If they come to England, they can make a new life for themselves and can sing God Save the Queen just like any other citizen. Yes, our diversity can lead to tension. And throughout our history, there have been heated debates about immigration and assimilation in both of our countries. But even as these debates can be difficult, we fundamentally recognize that our patchwork heritage is an enormous strength. That in a world which will only grow smaller and more interconnected, the example of our two nations says it is possible for people to be united by their ideals instead of divided by their differences. It is possible for hearts to change and old hatreds to pass. That it's possible for the sons and daughters of former colonies to sit here as members of this great parliament, and for the grandson of a Kenyan who served as a cook in the British Army to stand before you as President of the United States.
Fitting. It was I, the abstract,
and me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the frankfurter.
Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean?
A tidbit, a smidgen. I don't get the message, so you gots to
okay.
Run the pigeon.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
You're on point, Fife.
All the time, Tip.
So then grab the microphone and let your words rip.
Now here's a funky introduction of how nice I am. Tell your mother, tell your father, send a telegram. I'm like an energizer, cause you see I last long. My crew is never ever whack because we stand strong. Now if you say my style is whack, I swear you're dead wrong. I slay that body in El Segundo, then push it along. You'll be a fool to reply the Fife is not the man. Cause you know, and I know, that you know who I am. A special shout out piece goes out to all my pals, you see. And a middle finger goes for all you punk MCs. Cause I love it when you whack MCs despise me. They get vexed, I will next, cause none can test me. I'm just a fly MC who's 5'3" and very brave. On top remaining, no, I'm training cause I misbehave. I come correct and full effect, have all my holes in check. And before I get the butt, the gym must be a wreck. You see, my aura's positive, I don't promote no junk. See, I'm far from a bully and I ain't a punk. Extremity of rhythm, yeah, that's what you heard. So just clean out your ears and just check the word.
Check the time, y'all. Check the time.
The Boulevard of Linden, we used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the Viper,
and me, the abstract. The rhymes were so rumpin' that the brothers rolled the Zack.
Hey yo, Tip, do you recall when we used to rock those fly routines on your cousin's block?
Let me see. Damn, I can't remember. I received the message and you will play the same.
You're on point, Tip.
all the time, Fife.
You're on point, Tip.
Yeah, all the time, Fife.
You're on point, Tip.
You're all the time, Fife.
So play the resurrector, yeah, and give the dead some life.
Okay, if knowledge is the key, then just show me the lock. Got the scrawny legs, but I move just like Lou Brock with speed. I'm agile, plus I'm worth your while. 100% intelligent black child. My opera presentation sizzles the retina. How far must you go to gain respect? Well, it's kind of simple. Just remain your own, or you'll be crazy, sad, and alone. Industry rule number 4080. Record company people are shady. So kids, watch your back, cause I think they smoke crack. I don't doubt it, look at how they act. But off to better things like a hip-hop forum. Pass me the rock and I'll score them with the quorum. And proper, what you say, hammer? Proper, rap is not pop. If you call it that, then stop.
Now, we're speaking about expense. I suppose there are several ways to address oneself to some attempt to define what that word means here. Let me put it this way, that from a very literal point of view, the harbors and the ports and the railroads of the country, the economy, especially of the southern states, could not conceivably be what it has become if they had not had, and do not still have indeed, and for so long, so many generations, cheap labor. I'm stating very seriously, and this is not an overstatement, that I picked the cotton and I carried it to market and I built the railroads under someone else's whip for nothing. For nothing. The southern oligarchy, which has until today so much power in Washington and therefore some power in the world, was created by my labor and my sweat and the violation of my women and the murder of my children. This, in the land of the free and the home of the brave, and no one can challenge that statement. It is a matter of historical record.
Social distancing slows the spread of coronavirus, so stay a minimum of 6 feet away from others and stay home if you can. More info at coronavirus.gov. Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You have been listening to another pre-recorded edition of Songs from the Squid Pod. I'm Savoir Faire, and I hope you enjoyed tonight's celebration of Black artists from the 1980s. Be sure to join me here next Friday night at 10 p.m. when I bring you more great music from the 1980s. I've got time for one last track, but let's talk about what we've been listening to. Throughout the show tonight, we've been listening to background music from Maze, specifically the title track to his 1980 release, Joy and Pain, featuring Frankie Beverly. We began that last set with the subject of tonight's Squid Pod 80s Trivia Question of the Week, Whitney Houston, and her second number one hit, How Will I Know, from her self-titled debut from 1985. If you like 80s trivia, be sure to follow me on Twitter at SquidPod Radio, where I post the 80s trivia question of the week, as well as other 80s related news. The SOS Band gave us The Finest from 1986. That was the Savoir Faire mix, featuring an excerpt from President Barack Obama's 2011 address to Parliament at Westminster Hall. President Obama was the first American president to address Parliament at Westminster Hall. Another Savoir Faire mix followed, this time with A Tribe Called Quest, Check the Rhyme, featuring part of James Baldwin's debate with William F. Buckley at Cambridge University in 1965. I've posted YouTube links to these speeches in tonight's playlist. They are well worth your time if you haven't heard them in their entirety. And if you have, I'm sure you'll agree that they are always worth a revisit. As Edward Bucher of Plastic Sushi, Strawberries, and Time often likes to say, we are Tufts Freeform and sometimes educational radio. I'm going to leave you with one more Savoir Faire mix, this one from Joan Armatrading, and it features an excerpt from Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1964 Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech. Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay safe, and remember, keep wearing those masks. Ciao.
I accept this award on behalf of a civil rights movement which is moving with determination and a majestic scorn for risk and danger to establish a reign of freedom and a rule of justice. I am mindful that only yesterday in Birmingham, Alabama, our children crying out for brotherhood were answered with fire hoses, snarling dogs, and even death. I am mindful that only yesterday in Philadelphia, Mississippi, young people seeking to secure the right to vote were brutalized and murdered. I am mindful that debilitating and grinding poverty afflicts my people and chains them to the lowest rung of the economic ladder. Therefore, I must ask why this prize is awarded to a movement which is beleaguered and committed to unrelenting struggle, to a movement which has not yet won the very peace and brotherhood which is the essence of the Nobel Prize. After contemplation, I conclude that this award which I receive on behalf of that movement is a profound recognition that nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and moral questions of our time. The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to violence and oppression. Civilization and violence are antithetical concepts. Negroes of the United States, following the people of India, have demonstrated that nonviolence is not sterile passivity, but a powerful moral force which makes for social transformation. Sooner or later, all the peoples of the world will have to discover a way to live together in peace and thereby transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of brotherhood. If this is to be achieved, man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love.
Anybody looking on, they can see I'm not so good. People in the know, they can see that I miss you. in the night with no one to hear me. I'm afraid and I cry. Seasons change, but there's nothing changes my mind. I've been loving you too long, and I can't seem to stop. You are my lifeline, you make me happy. I said that, I had to say it, baby. Who on earth ever held me like you? I'd like to see someone try love by you. In your time, baby, come back to me. Don't leave this girl lost in space. You're the one who could guide me out of this maze.
You know, there's so many people, indeed my own sons at times, look at me with an expression on the face that they don't believe what happened in the past. There are movements by the different branches of this government.
Due to COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy. This is-